Welcome to Tech News Briefing. It's Wednesday, May 21st. I'm Victoria Craig for The Wall Street Journal. Lost in translation, a problem of the past? At least, that's the aim of a new AI service from Google. We'll take it for a spin. Then, the global tech industry is dominated by American heavyweights. We'll explain what's holding back Europe. But first, live, real-time translations are usually reserved for important large-scale events like press conferences from world leaders or speeches at the United Nations. That's because it involves an interpreter speaking in real time. But yesterday, Google announced that kind of service is now available for Google Meet video chats. Subscribers of the company's advanced Gemini AI can access it for $20 a month. And rather than just dubbing your voice with the native human speakers, Google's system mimics your voice to speak in the listener's language. Our personal tech columnist, Nicole Nguyen, tried it out.
Where would you like to go on your next vacation?
Well, I can tell you about an upcoming vacation that I'm taking to Spain, to Mallorca, a España, a Mallorca, donde mi esposo se encuentra con la familia de
No, Nicole doesn't speak Spanish, but it did sound an awful lot like her, didn't it? And that's the point. Nicole joins me now from just outside Google's developers conference in Mountain View, California. Nicole, it sounded like you were speaking fluent Spanish there, but you obviously weren't. What did you make of that?
I was creeped out. It does sound a lot like me. I felt like my Spanish alter ego jumped out of the screen and was looking at me in the face. And when I showed it to my colleagues, my boss, who I've worked with for the past 5 years, and my husband, they were like, whoa, it sounds like you are speaking Spanish.
Okay, so it sounds authentic. It even gives you, like, a native Spanish accent. But how accurate were the translations?
So I showed this video clip to my colleague, who is a native Spanish speaker, and she was like, the beginning kind of sounds like gibberish. There was a rough start. Some words are stuttered, and I think that the translation tech, the AI that's powering this technology, was trying to catch up. You know, it's trying to predict what I'm trying to say with the right tone, with the right intonation before it has the full picture. And so it is a difficult problem. But when you're conversing with someone, it can be a little startling if you can't understand them right away. But towards the end, the speech was clearer and more understandable.
So how does this work? So you log on to a Google Meet, just like we're doing now, and then what happens?
If you pay for Google Gemini, then you get access to this tool. And those plans are $20 and up. And they're the same kinds of plans where, like, if you use Google Photos and you need more storage, you buy more storage through these plans. It's the more expensive version of these plans that come with AI features that includes this Google Meet Translator feature. And you set your preferred language that you speak and the language that you'd like to hear. And that turns on speech translation for everyone in the call. So anytime someone is speaking on the call, it will be translated into your preferred language if they're not already speaking your language. And this feature is first rolling out for English and Spanish.
As with all other AI uses, the biggest question is always around security and safety of the platform. Does this new translation service change any of that for Google Meet? Does Google store any of these conversations somewhere, or do you have complete privacy when it comes to accessing this?
Google says that it is not storing any audio data, either for training its model or for the purposes of improving its product. However, I think that one thing to consider is that this feature is experimental. Translation is art, language is very complex, and a pop-up warns that the translations may not always be accurate. And that's definitely something to keep in mind, especially if you plan on having a more serious conversation, you know, a business conversation with this translation feature on. You don't want anything to get lost in translation.
That was WSJ personal tech columnist Nicole Nguyen. Coming up, the global tech revolution is leaving Europe behind. But why? We'll dig into the myriad reasons after the break. Google, Meta, Amazon, Apple. What do all of those big tech behemoths have in common? They come from the U.S. And that trend of American dominance in tech is creating a problem for Europe. In the same way that cars replaced horses and buggies, new tech is replacing old ways of working. That evolution allows a country to produce more goods with the same number of workers. And that is a key driver of prosperity. Tom Fairless is a reporter covering the European economy for the Wall Street Journal in Frankfurt. Tom, you write that the tech revolution is leaving Europe behind. Why is that?
Yeah, so it's a serious issue for Europe that its economy has been very sluggish since the COVID crisis. And the US has really rocketed out of the crisis and grown very strongly and caught up to where it should have been before. And Europe has really just stagnated. And Mario Draghi, the former Italian prime minister and European Central Bank president, pinpointed tech as the kind of epicenter of this growth disaster in a landmark report last September. So other parts of the economy are okay. The manufacturing sector is pretty productive, but it's specifically tech where Europe seems to struggle and has struggled for 20 years or so. It has not produced the Amazons and the Apples. The typical day of me in Germany is to use a lot of US services because there is just no European alternative.
So why is that? What's the difference between the two places?
The crux of it is that it's maybe a different economic model in Europe. It's a structural issue where the US market is much more kind of an open competitive field and also much bigger market. And so you can get this sort of raw capitalism, lots of investors willing to take on risk, businesses willing to try new things. And in Europe, there really isn't that sort of dynamic. It's much more of an economy based on relationships with banks, bank financing. There's less reward if you take risks. So if you're a business and you have the alternative to try a new service from a startup, in the US, you take it because you might get a bonus or get a promotion if you do that as the employee. In Europe, there's probably not much of a chance. There's more of a risk that, you know, you'll lose what you have. So it's kind of a continent of risk aversion. And that, I think, explains why these new ventures tend to come very late to Europe. They adopt things like Uber rather than create alternatives of their own.
And that's some of the biggest reasons you point out. As you mentioned, it's private capital in the US. There's much more of that versus government funding, less regulation in the US, and even cultural differences. But can we zoom in a little bit on the regulation in Europe? Because for many businesses you spoke to, they cited that as one of the biggest hurdles to starting and really growing a company on the continent.
One of the AI startup entrepreneurs who got very frustrated being based in Berlin and is actually now in California, he moved while we were writing the story. He said that when he talks to investors and businesses in Germany about AI, they're worried about the risks. It's always the downside, the threat, the ethics. But whereas when he goes to China or the US, it's much more about the opportunity and the growth prospects. And that's why he feels much more at home there. And Europe was very proud of its regulation of AI. It was very proud to be one of the first jurisdictions to bring out these sweeping AI regulations. But that's made American companies that come here restrict their models and limit what they offer at first. And as an AI company trying to grow out of Europe, investors and entrepreneurs were saying it's very, very difficult.
And you write in your piece that Europe is really dominated by some of these old school industries, especially in Germany, like autos, even banks, and the productivity gains were long extracted years ago. We're talking about all the hurdles to starting and growing new tech businesses in Europe. What are some of the ways that these people, these companies can overcome those hurdles to be successful? Is there a roadmap?
Mario Draghi did come up with a plan, but it seems heavily based around governments and government funding. And some of the analysts and investors we spoke to are quite skeptical of that, that that's actually the problem, that governments are too involved and it needs to be private capital that does this. Ultimately, maybe there's not a whole amount that Europe can do in this area, that it's a cultural difference. This idea of risk aversion, this strange kind of contradiction that Europe has the cities, which often are the best places to live, supposedly, in kind of these global indices. And yet, at the same time, it's no longer at the cutting edge of economic growth.
That was Tom Fairless, WSJ's European economics reporter. And that's it for Tech News Briefing. I'm Victoria Craig for The Wall Street Journal. We'll be back this afternoon with TNB Tech Minute. Thanks for listening.